So I obviously went to Thinkful's coding bootcamp, but I'm so excited today to have Brian as our guest today. Brian and I have known each other for a very long time. We used to play tennis back in the day. I don't know if Brian still plays tennis. I definitely don't. But Brian attended a different bootcamp. He attended Le Wagon bootcamp, and I may be saying that wrong, but Brian, you attended in Berlin, right?
So I actually attended my bootcamp in Tel Aviv.
Welcome to Suitcase Coder, the podcast. I'm Laura, and I host this podcast where I track my journey from joining a coding bootcamp to becoming a remote developer. My ultimate goal in life is to travel the world and see as many countries as I can, but for now, I'm sharing what I've learned so far to hopefully help and inspire future techies, freelancers, and digital nomads. Thanks for tuning in, and let's get started.
Oh, I did not know that. You just lived in Berlin. Okay, well, I will then let you take over. And tell us all about, well, introduce yourself first.
My name is Brian Layton, and I'm also from San Antonio, Texas, the same as Laura. And I was living in Tel Aviv during my early 20s, I guess you could say. I mean, I'm 27, so I don't know if that still constitutes as early 20s. But in Tel Aviv, I was really itching to do something kind of with my passion for science. And I guess I'll backpedal a little bit, but I studied international relations at the University of Texas in Austin. And I originally wanted to also do something sciencey, so kind of pair up either with physics or an engineering degree. But since I wanted to move to Israel, didn't feel like I had enough time to be able to do that and then move at like an early age. So I threw away the idea of doing any type of STEM degree. And so when I was in Israel, I noticed that I really liked computers, and I'm a big video game player. And so, of course, I think as a lot of video game players are thinking, is that we want to try to build something ourselves and build, like, I don't know, some type of video game as like an RPG, a role-playing game that I really wanted to do. And so that's when I realized and began looking into coding boot camps. And I noticed that Le Wagon was ranked really well on SwitchUp at the time. And it was primarily in Europe, and they didn't have a branch in Tel Aviv. And then a friend reached out to me and told me about how they're opening up a bootcamp in Tel Aviv. And I was like, cool, okay. And he's like, yeah, it's called Le Wagon. And I was like, no, they're not. They're only in Europe. They're not opening here. And he's like, no, they're having a pilot bootcamp in Tel Aviv. So from there, I decided to go ahead and sign up with Le Wagon, which was starting in Tel Aviv.
That's awesome. So you were kind of set on Le Wagon. Is that how you say it?
Yeah,
it's French
company. Yeah.
Okay.
So they're originally from Paris and have kind of expanded all throughout Europe now.
Okay.
So I think they're the largest boot camp you have in Europe. It's them and Iron Hack are the two main ones.
That makes sense. And I just got a flashback. I totally had forgotten about this, but we actually both also talked about like languages for a while too, right? Like way back in the day, you were learning French and I was learning German, and we both kind of like, oh yeah, languages is so cool. We kind of want to do something with that. And in a way we kind of did.
I got my degree in international relations, and like we have to focus in a language as well. So I chose French as my language specialty. So I don't really speak it anymore at all, but that's beside the point.
Right. That happens.
So probably because of that too, of like having a French boot camp, I was like, oh, maybe I'll like have a French teacher. And I'll be able to practice my French or something. I don't know. Didn't quite work out that way, but yeah, I was in Tel Aviv at the time, so that's the bootcamp I chose. Was when they were opening up a branch, I was like, I have to do Le Wagon.
So how did you come across like Le Wagon? Like, why was that the one that you had decided on from the beginning?
So I did a lot of researching across different bootcamps, and one of the big websites, I don't know if you mentioned before, but you have SwitchUp. Mm-hmm. Which is a coding bootcamp. And so they were ranked number one, I think, on SwitchUp, and then pretty high on other websites as well. And they didn't have like Hack Reactor, General Assembly, or any of like the main ones that you have in the United States and Israel. So when I saw that Le Wagon was coming, I think that kind of like cemented the decision for me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So because I know like a lot of people kind of jump into boot camps first and then kind of figure out whether they want to do it or not. Was that what you did, or did you kind of like already have an idea that you wanted to get into this, and then like you obviously did some research with the boot camp and then jumped into the boot camp?
I knew I wanted to do it. I wouldn't say it was something that I wanted to test out first. So I think a lot of boot camps will do this, though, is you'll receive like prep work. That usually it's like an enormous amount of work that you need to do before your boot camp starts. And there was kind of, I decided like if I enjoy doing this, then it'll be something and I'll stick with the boot camp. So I think from the prep work, I kind of knew that this is what I wanted to do before I started the actual 9-week boot camp. Yeah, it's short. It's a really short boot camp.
Was it super intense?
I think as intense as any other one you will have. So typical days are from 9 until 6:30 or 7, which I think is fairly common with boot camp days.
No, that's just kind of what I wanted to ask next is like the structure. So I obviously went to Thinkful. I talk about it all the time. And mine was all online. So we had like our own curriculum and we basically like taught ourselves by following the curriculum and then just met up with mentors like twice a week to make sure that we were on task and so on. But like yours was fully in person in classroom. What was that like? Like how many students? Give us like a picture of what it was like actually going into a boot camp.
So I'll kind of give a little bit of history over Lwagon first and then I'll go in specific for Tel Aviv. Okay. So Lwagon is a French boot camp originated in France. I'm pretty sure it was in Paris. And they have since grown and are, I think they're like 40 different cities now throughout the world. So they have a few cities that are core cities, meaning that are owned by the actual company. And then most of the other branches are franchises. So the one in Tel Aviv was a franchise that I ended up doing. And so because of this, your student count per boot camp really varies. So in the core boot camps, typically you'll have a lot higher amount of students, which is, for example, I was instructing in Berlin. So there, we had a lot higher of a headcount compared to Tel Aviv. My cohorts, which we call batches. Mm-hmm. So my batch, we were 12 students. And I think throughout the time that varied between 12 to 25 in Tel Aviv specifically. In Berlin, it was much larger. So we would have between 40 to 45 students per batch.
I definitely want to get more into Berlin because Berlin's my favorite city ever. Yeah. I'm so jealous. Okay, so then as far as like the course that you went through, like the curriculum, what stack or what things did you learn? And what was your starting point? Like how much did you know going into it before even the prep work?
I didn't know anything before the prep work, I would say. I was actually applying into another boot camp in Tel Aviv that I ended up not choosing. And so I would say that was probably my first experience into it, but it was also prep work for that one. So nothing before that really at all. Maybe like I knew playing World of Warcraft that you would have this obscure script that you would have to copy into your terminal to get this add-on onto the game. But other than that, I didn't know anything else. So yeah, I didn't know anything. The structure of the bootcamp now. So this is the same across any Lwagon across the world. It's 9 weeks. The first 2 weeks are Ruby. So it's a Ruby on Rails full stack development. Then we do a 4-day module on object-oriented programming. Then after that, we go into a database module. So after that database module, we go into front end. Week 6 and 7, we start learning Rails, Ruby on Rails. So this is when we start to do more of full stack applications and you'll build like a mini app every day.
Every day.
Rails is really fast development. Then the next week is actually when we begin our projects. And then at the last 2 weeks is when we have our project weeks. From design, so we'll do a product design as well, all the way to a finished MVP that we demo to the public on the last day for demo day.
That's a whole, I feel like it's a whole lot more than what I did at Thinkful. I don't know if it's just because it's been a while since I did the bootcamp and like the way you're laying it out, I'm like, oh my gosh, having to learn all of that again. But it's also, it feels like backwards. So like with Thinkful, we did the front end first. So you always start with HTML, CSS, JavaScript, and then we jump into more of like the back end CRUD apps type of stuff. I mean, there's no other way to compare, but like, did you like the way that you started the curriculum or would you have preferred doing it the other way around?
I enjoyed the way that they laid it out because you begin to get in the mindset of thinking as a developer. So in the first 2 weeks, it's normally like, okay, what is a string? What is an array? What is a hash or an object? Mm-hmm. Which sets it up where you're already familiar with these concepts by the time you get to JavaScript. And you've had some complexity before you get to the front end as well, meaning like, which I don't want to say complexity compared to front end, because a lot of people do struggle on the HTML, especially CSS.
Yeah.
Which it can be very difficult. Either you're, people are usually either drawn really to the back end side of the logic and systems mindsets versus those who like to make boxes. Like I like to make boxes normally.
Yeah. So you're more of a front end person?
Yeah, I would say not what I do now at all, but I have much more, like I enjoy more spatial awareness, which I think goes a lot more hand in hand with front end development, mm-hmm. of having to kind of conceptualize what you want to appear on the screen and how you lay it out before you build it, essentially. The way they do it, I think, is probably a little bit, I would say, to give it a little bit more of a traditional feel, since you'll get kind of like the basic computer science fundamental ideals. When I say computer science fundamentals, I mean basic learning how to code, not in terms of learning like computer science theory or big annotation, time complexity, or any of those.
But it seems like they're at least building some kind of foundation on like all the theory, like you're building a foundation of what coding will be on.
Yeah.
That could be applied to a whole bunch of things, right? So like you said, like strings, arrays, like object oriented, all that stuff is going to, you will see like across coding almost no matter what language you end up choosing.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And I think it does help with some front ends, like for example, with CSS or HTML, is that you get used to syntax. Mm-hmm. And it's, if you have that familiarity and are a little bit more sensitive to how things are supposed to be written out, then it can help you with when you begin to write HTML and CSS, especially with HTML. Like if you're not structuring your, if you're not structuring the DOM correctly, or if you're missing a div or some type of closing tag, then it can become a lot more difficult to find it. So I think it does help with that mindset of you are thinking more programmatically and trying to think like a computer in this regard.
That's true. I've honestly never even considered learning it backwards, or what in my mind seems like backwards. You learn the back end first, but it does make sense to where it gives you more of like a foundational base to start from. And then like from there, HTML and CSS is, like you said, not easy, but
it's more approachable.
Yeah.
Than it is. And Ruby is very much like English. So I think that's also probably the biggest reason why they wanted to learn that one first.
Right.
Before HTML and CSS.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about syntax in that regard as much, mm-hmm. of like.
You actually think more like you're able to like put logical sentences into like code easy.
Yeah.
Would you suggest to people, or would you advise to anybody like getting started now to take some time on their own before joining a bootcamp?
Yes.
That was an immediate yes. If you're not watching on YouTube, it was an immediate.
I highly recommend to see if it's for you. I do not think a bootcamp style is for everyone. Also, as we had very different bootcamp structures too. So there are, not every bootcamp is for each person. Doing a full-time in-person bootcamp is not for everyone. It may be better if they do more of a self-paced one. Just depends on how you learn. I think doing some type of prep work, one, in the beginning, will show you if you actually do enjoy coding. I know a lot of people probably do this. I don't want to talk for other people, but I mean, this was a pretty big incentive for why I wanted to do it too, is because like of the pay jump that you get. And I think financially, people do think it is a really rewarding, and my bootcamp paid off, I would say, that people do want to make more money than probably they are in the current job. And that is a reason that they moved to the bootcamp. I would just say, just make sure you also enjoy what you're doing as well. It's okay if you want more money. All of us do, I think, at some point. But I do see a lot of people who just try to do it and then get really burned out really fast. And it's, I don't know, it's heartbreaking to see that you've spent a lot of money, you've invested this time into doing it, and you should enjoy it as well. Enjoy it in the sense of like, you do like coding during the bootcamp, it might not be really enjoyable. But it is something that you've at least know that you can see yourself doing in the future. That is a big reason why you should try to like go to Code Academy, try a course, and see if you like it or not.
Right. No, I totally agree with you. I feel like a lot of people, I don't want to speak for anybody, but I know of people who have joined because of money, or because they want to like get a good paying job really quickly or be able to travel the world, which is what I want to do. But also like you said, they burn out so quickly. And if the only way to make this money is to continue doing this for a long time, so there's really no way of like avoiding coding if that's, you know, if that's the end goal.
Oh, I just also wanted to elaborate, even if I say it's not for everyone, the bootcamp doesn't mean that you shouldn't learn. I think like you just have to find out if you would prefer to do it on a self-paced self-study. If maybe doing a degree is more your pace, then do it in a degree. If you want to do a bootcamp and you want to join in, like jump in right away, then do a bootcamp. But just because you find that you're not liking it in a bootcamp setting doesn't mean that it's completely not for you. Maybe you might like doing it if you are doing it on a more either slower pace or on your own time. So
yeah, no, that's a really good point. Which kind of brings me to your experience as an instructor at the same boot camp in a different city, my favorite city of all time ever. I love Berlin. Do you want to tell us about that?
It turned into a freelance traveling teacher. My partner, she's German. And so after my boot camp, I ended up moving to Berlin. Primarily, that was the reason. And she happened to be the instructor for Berlin as well. So that's kind of how I think I got my into teaching in Berlin.
So did sorry, I'm interrupting. So did you guys meet there? Did you know her before and you opened it up? Or is that like not a story for the podcast?
You got me. No, that's good. She was my instructor in Tel Aviv.
So fun.
So yeah, that's how I
find love in a book. Maybe not with coding, but that's funny.
We joke that Loagon is sometimes also another, essentially like an app for dating. So yeah, I moved to Berlin and I guess to make money, I decided to try to start off as a teaching assistant. So I started to work as a TA in Berlin, and I also went a couple times to Tel Aviv as well. So I would help TA in Tel Aviv as well as in Berlin. Teaching was what really helped me learn the most, I would say. You learn so much in the boot camp. Don't know if it really stuck around, but I think when I began having to teach it, the way it works is that we have in Luagon is we have like specific exercises you have to complete. And it is the same exercises no matter where you are in the world, right? So we have like a very strict, curriculum that we do. And so when I went to Berlin, it was the same exercises that I did, essentially, that you need to redo them and then help coach people through them. And so one of the biggest advices that we get is that we have to redo them. So I ended up pretty much like redoing all of the bootcamp exercises again. And I think that having to redo it and then try to think of ways of how to explain certain concepts is what really helped a lot of the information stick.
Yeah.
So there, I think who I've seen, like who have really progressed really far, those who typically also try to teach or mentor as well afterwards.
Okay.
Because even if you don't fully understand or know something, when you begin to have to explain it, it'll help you really understand it. And
you're kind of in that way, you're kind of
as well.
Yeah. You're kind of forced to learn it enough to be able to answer any questions or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And I think here's a big difference. What I would like to say between teaching assistants and teachers are we usually like to say that you want to ask teaching assistants to kind of work through the problem with you, right? So they might not always know it off, like kind of immediately off the top of their head, but since they've encountered it, they can still help guide in working together, go through the correct avenue to find the answer, even though if they don't, might not know the answer. Well, teachers typically were much more experienced, and so they would know things on a better level as well. So if you needed, like, maybe you understood a concept, but didn't quite understand where the answer was derived from, then a teacher might be a more appropriate person to ask for that.
I feel like that's a good thing to know also, like for students coming in and not feel like discouraged or disappointed when a TA can't answer their question. And also like kind of know like what levels of support that they're getting. Like you're going to have one teacher who's going to know essentially everything. And if not, they'll be able to figure it out for you. But also you'll have TAs who I feel like usually have also, I mean, everyone's had to have learned this at some point, right? So like everybody has that experience of having to have learned whatever it is mm-hmm. you're learning. So the TAs can kind of help have a more fresh understanding of what you went through and like how to think through these new, like brand new concepts or something like that.
Which is, yeah, I completely agree. And why like Tel Aviv, I keep saying that. Lwagon has a pretty good track record of bringing back students to be teaching assistants, while like I think most TAs have to be in-house. Instructors, people will find externally as well, so people who are not bootcamp alumni from Lwagon. But it does help with people who have gone through the curriculum and understand the pain that you're finding. If like, I remember being stuck on this problem, it's okay, you can solve it too, don't worry.
There is a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that was one kind of, I would say, critique I would have of students at time is expecting TAs to be on the same level as teachers, or expecting them to give the answer in the same fashion as a teacher would. And I try to just remind them that like TAs are, they do have to serve a different purpose than a teacher. Like if it's something that you're really completely clueless and don't understand the concept at all, the teacher is probably a better person to ask, as they are supposed to be the expert in the material over that day.
Right.
Well, I mean, some TAs, of course, like are like, if you do come across with experienced TA, feel free to ask them, and you can ask them first as well if you're not comfortable going to the teacher. But also don't be discouraged if the TA says like, oh, I don't know this, let me go ask someone else, or like, let's try to work this out together, or find, you know, bring in a second opinion.
Yeah, I think that's, I guess, something I'm trying to come across, because I know like that happens with Thinkful too, like the mentors are supposed to know everything, or like you're supposed to get help and like they're supposed to guide you through everything, and people or students get really discouraged and like, oh, I'm here and paying all this money and they can't help me. And like, instead of looking at it like that, at the end of the day, like really they're just trying to help you be able to figure it out on your own, because once you get out of this bootcamp environment, that's the reality of it. You are going to have maybe nobody or maybe a couple people, but like you're not going to have that like direct access of a bunch of TAs, a mentor, a teacher, and like other students going through the exact same thing that can help you out. Yeah. So I think it's like encouraging for students to hear that before even joining the bootcamp and like knowing what to expect. So did you switch then from TA to teacher?
So yeah, 4 or 5 months of TAing, and then usually like the teaching staff will begin to see those who are probably sticking around more as TAs, or who they see kind of show potential in teaching. So then you can like usually ask to take a lecture if you want. And so then you kind of apprentice as a teacher, and then they'll walk you through it and you'll rehearse it and giving a lecture.
That's really cool. One of the things that like a lot of people see in all the different boot camps that are popping up is that like sometimes the teachers are just like fresh out of the boot camp themselves. And that can be discouraging, but I like that what you're saying is it has that balance between the two. I feel like it's almost always seen as like a bad thing that the students who just graduated are the ones teaching. But in a way, like you're saying, those are the people that are going to understand your struggles and understand exactly what you're going through and be able to like walk with you through the problems and like help you out way better than somebody who's been doing the same thing for 10 years and is very like focused on this like niche thing in their office. So there's definitely like pros and cons to each, but I like what you're saying, that it has that balance between the two. So you went from bootcamp to TA to teacher, and now you're doing something super exciting. Tell us about the following transition. So like obviously like teaching and TAing was a really good way to sink in everything that you'd learned. And I'm sure like after that built up your confidence and helped with like imposter syndrome and all of those things.
Sure, I guess. I think you'll always feel imposter syndrome. I feel it a lot, especially at the moment. Yeah, that never goes away. Okay. And I think even talking with, I'll talk about imposter syndrome a little bit, but what I'm doing now, so I, following teaching, at the same time when I began teaching, I also got into freelancing as a web developer. So I was working as a digital nomad, I guess you could say. I would say after like a year and a half bout of working as a instructor/freelancer, I decided to just kind of throw my name into that for a program called Microsoft Leap, which is an apprenticeship program with Microsoft. And it's a 4-month apprenticeship program. They extended a lot of us because of the COVID situation as well. That was so I worked as an apprentice in Microsoft.
You were saying that you work for Microsoft like Corporation, and you work with some of their biggest corporations,
clients, like yeah, Time customers, Warner. You could say.
Customers. Okay.
If they need help with like either a product that is related with Microsoft technologies, then what we'll do is we'll actually go on an engagement and then work with their engineering teams as well. So that's kind of what our org does. So that's why I like to say we're like others for other companies, because we kind of go and we'll help them solve an issue.
That's pretty cool, because I'm sure you get the bit of everything. Sorry, I'm cutting you off.
Yeah. So typically there isn't like us, like we don't have a set stack that we do, right? Mm-hmm. So it depends on whatever a customer is using is what we'll use to, or we'll have to come to some agreement on what technologies they should use, what is best for their needs that they need to use as well. So within this org though, is that you have specific, like what we call now, like tech domains or solution areas, which are small, like specialized teams that will focus on a specific technology. So my apprenticeship was for one of these specialized teams.
Got it.
Which now they're called the Cloud Native Platforms team. So they specialize on technology primarily dealing with like Kubernetes and Azure Community Services, Docker, anything that's like a cloud native platform on Azure, they are supposed to be an expert in, essentially, right? So if like another engagement, if another team needs help with like, are not sure on how they should approach, they should use, like if they should use, you know, Kubernetes for a specific solution, then they can call one of the experts from my team and they'll join on to them and help them with like guide them over that specific area.
So I have a question. I'm assuming that they knew that you were very junior in those topics, like that those things were very new to you, right?
Yeah.
So what was important to them then, like talking about like after boot camp, like being able to get hired and stuff, is your ability to learn and your ability to like take something like that on and then still, you know, with over time, feel comfortable enough to be able to like help out the team and stuff.
Yeah, so exactly. So it should be that you have, we're kind of like evaluated over certain competencies. And so it's mm-hmm. like one of them is technical excellence. And so we have to be, so usually this would be evaluated with like, you should feel comfortable being uncomfortable with technologies and feeling, or is, so that's one aspect, and like should also feel encouraged or excited to learn things that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And especially within our department or our org, is you never know what you're going to be using, and you could be using some obscure language.
Just talking about that, I'm nervous, but it's exactly what like people need to realize, is like that's what developers do, is you go into something brand new, or you have to like go in and be ready to tackle essentially any problem that you're faced with.
Yeah. And I think I can only really speak for my org within Microsoft, but even comparing it to the other leapers who I knew, like most of us had to pick up some new technology, right? And then expect it to perform and use it.
Right.
And build whatever project that we had to do. You are more expected, I think, like with Microsoft, expectations are more that you are willing to learn and willing to be able to pick up and have like these fundamental concepts that you know that you will make you more language agnostic, because it's not necessarily the language isn't what is most important to learn. It's kind of like the more, I would say, of the paradigms of what you're writing in and knowing the differences and the strengths and weaknesses of certain languages.
That brings me to two points, which may or may not be true. I don't know if you'll agree with me, but like one is to like not be afraid to apply to jobs, even if you don't know the languages or even if you don't know like everything. And two is to always continue learning, because it seems like as long as you always keep learning, whether or like reviewing or like you keep up with it, then you can essentially get any job that you want. as long as like you're willing to go in and like do the work and learn what you have to learn and then not be scared to actually like give it a try and stuff.
No, I completely agree with you. And I think that was, I was very, I would say, jaded after the boot camp of like, I don't need to learn. Like I really like JavaScript. I only want to find jobs in JavaScript or Ruby on Rails because that's what I know. I don't want to learn Python. I don't want to do anything else because I know what I know, and like I'm going to have a better experience coding on what I know, and that's what matters most, is the technology stack. And so it was really eye-opening as well, coming into Microsoft and then even on my team, right? So my team are supposed to be, or they are too, like the experts on like Kubernetes that you have in our org, right? So like they're supposed to know the ins and outs of Kubernetes. And few of them are like, I would say a good portion of them had no experience with Kubernetes before they joined this team. So I think that just kind of shows as well, like, don't be afraid, one, to apply for jobs, as you said, that are not using the correct technologies. And even if you, if your company decides to pivot and then use a completely different stack, you know, instead of taking that as like a hindrance or like an annoying thing that you have to rewrite something in a completely different language you don't know and it's not your, you're not comfortable in it, like as an opportunity to learn, and then it'll make you a better programmer in other languages that you use as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the coolest things I saw of like, even in Microsoft, people have been front-end developer, back-end developer, or systems admin, did DevOps, now we're doing like cloud infrastructure development. And so you have people who've like jumped around into like so many different breadths of area. Because in the end, like a software engineer is a software engineer. You'll touch on many different pieces.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to do things that you're not as comfortable with as well. One of the biggest things I've noticed with more of the senior type of developers who are very effective are the ones who are able to admit and also understand that they don't know something right away and that they're faster to go search for it, right? So they'll just be like, okay, I don't know this, give me a little bit, I'm gonna go search.
Right.
You know? And then so a lot of it is just like kind of narrowing down how well you can Google.
I hear that over and over again. And I like always wonder like, how true is it? But honestly, everything's on the internet. Like, and that keeps blowing my mind like every day. Like it's like impossible not to be able to do something when the internet exists. And like when so much of it is on YouTube, when it's like even more visual than just the internet.
I don't know. I see myself progressing mainly by like where I'm searching for information. So like even before going to Google, I'll be like, okay, I don't know what this command is in the CL, like in the command line, right? So I can use the manual and look it up there before even jumping to Google.
Right.
So it's like just understanding the different options you have of like looking of like I think this is an Einstein quote that I'm about to butcher, but it's like intelligence isn't about what you know, it's about knowing where to look for it. And I think that's very true and applicable to development as well, where like most of the senior developers I know just have a more experience of being able to like understand what logical component they're missing and how they can search for that.
That's where
it really comes down.
Yeah, that's a really good quote. And I had an episode in season one where I kind of talk about like, you have to know what you don't know in order to look for it. And like that in and of itself is frustrating, but it only makes you, like you're saying, I feel like it only makes you a better developer because it makes you look into your own code and your own mistakes and like look at the gaps and try to fill that on your own. I like that quote. Well, congrats on like this whole journey that you've taken and like making
this
tech. And that's awesome that you've lived in so many places. I'm quite jealous. Is there, and this is totally off topic, but is there any place that you've lived in or visited that you would recommend people to check out?
Ooh, I have to go with Berlin with you. And Copenhagen.
Okay, I've never been to Copenhagen, but one of my favorite movies is called Copenhagen and it takes place in Copenhagen.
Oh, okay.
And I've been wanting to go there for years, but maybe once COVID is over, I'll head there.
Yes. Yes.
And
please
so
don't travel as much yet.
Yeah. Maybe one day. If you're listening and are hiring in Berlin, let me know. I would love to move there.
Yeah.
Any excuse to live in Berlin. Okay. What about any advice, tips, or resources that you would want to like share with people who are potentially thinking about making the career switch or like are just getting started with it?
I will say I'll do it first for people who are just getting into it or maybe I just finished the bootcamp. Everyone has imposter syndrome. It's not an uncommon phenomenon, right? So even I was be talking to my manager who is like this genius at Microsoft and like built incredible components. And like, he also says he has imposter syndrome and which is, I don't know, it was really crazy for me to think.
That's both discouraging and very encouraging to hear. Like it's discouraging to hear that we'll never like grow out of it, but it's encouraging to hear that like everybody goes through it. And like you're saying, it's a very common thing.
Yeah. So I very much felt imposter syndrome when I joined my previous team at Microsoft. Now I'm feeling even more imposter syndrome as I came on as a full-time employee. Right. And yeah, it's not going to go away. But I think just understanding that it's there and then realizing that it's just showing that it's a good thing to notice, because it does show that you care mm-hmm. of what you're doing and that you do want a sense of belonging. And I think if you just, let people know as well, if you feel like it's hampering your work, mm-hmm. feel free to, you should be able to talk to your manager about it. And, sometimes it's nice to hear if they're able to kind of affirm your work or things like that. And I think a good tip that I wish I did more is to document your achievements, right? So if you end up learning a new language, write it down. If you accomplish something that you hadn't done before, write it down. And that way you have a list of accomplishments that you've done throughout your career. So that way you can look and see that, if I don't feel like I'm qualified for this, and then you're able to have an objective list of what you've done. And I'm
literally writing that down right now, because that's a really good
And also on a side note, for taking it for asking for promotions, if you have a list of quantifiable things that you've done since you've started working, then you've shown that you are worth more, you're more valuable essentially to the company as well.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good tip. Both to be imposter syndrome, but also to grow as a developer in your career. I like that.
Because you'll feel like you're stagnant at times. I think that's fairly normal that you're not learning, and you really are. And just if you're able to write it down and you can see that you are, and it does help kind of okay, I don't belong here, but at least I know that I've done these other things.
Right. You'll find that you haven't actually just been staring at your computer for the last 6 months. Yeah. You've actually contributed. Yeah,
somehow. Exactly. For those who are thinking about doing a bootcamp, I would say definitely give it a shot first. I'm very big proponent of try to do what you love, or try to, if it's not something that you love, definitely enjoy it. No matter the amount of money, will be worth being completely unhappy in any job that you're in, right? Life is not about work. It's about your life. And so the less that you feel like you want to suffer, you want to die during the 8 hours every day, then the better it'll be. And I think that it'll be a little bit healthier as well. And I think that's why I made the career switch as well. Yeah, I enjoyed programming. So happy that I was able to get to it. And if you don't, also, if you feel like the bootcamp is not your setting, then don't be discouraged to try other things too. Mm-hmm. Some people may prefer a CS degree. Some people may prefer doing it, self-study.
That's a really good point, is I think giving yourself a chance and not just giving up on the first try. Because like you said, at some point you said something and I'm going to butcher this. It's okay to be uncomfortable with being uncomfortable. And like you said, coding is definitely one of those situations where you have to be uncomfortable. You have to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. I keep butchering that.
Yeah. Things I would highly recommend, and I guess mm-hmm. I'll try to, at least podcast wise, I listened to a podcast called Syntax.
Okay.
I don't know if you mentioned it.
Yep.
Heard of it. By Wes Bos and Scott Talinsky. Amazing. They're both full stack Node.js developers primarily. But some of their podcasts they have one on imposter syndrome, which I thought was a lot of my own. Probably what I said is probably from them too. I feel like I just regurgitate what they say.
No, but that's okay.
And things even for freelancing of how to gain clients, where to look for clients, how to, maintain healthy relationships. They have fitness, they just talk about developer life in general as well as specific technologies. So I think I highly recommend listening to Wes and Scott on their podcast. Mm-hmm. Also, if you enjoy Dungeons and Dragons or anyone who enjoys funny podcasts, I recommend Not Another D&D podcast.
That's hilarious.
That's a really good one.
I've never actually played Dungeons and Dragons, but I did watch Community. I don't know if you've seen Community. Okay. You posted a meme about Community. I was like, oh my God, I just finished watching it. It's so good. But they played Dungeons and Dragons in that show. And ever since, I've been like, oh my God, I kind of want to try Dungeons and Dragons now. I have no idea. I still don't understand, but maybe I'll try it out when I visit.
Yeah, we definitely should. Let me know. I have a couple of friends who would be interested, I'm sure. But yeah, it's collective storytelling. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I honestly enjoyed it so much. And I loved hearing your entire journey into tech, hearing about a different boot camp on a different part of the world, and then also just like your transition into a giant company like Microsoft. And so that was, I don't know, it was very like encouraging, and you gave a lot of good tips in here, I feel like, to anybody getting started. And it was just great seeing you again. It's been like,
yeah,
I think over 10
years probably. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Something like that.
There you go. Found it.
I should maybe do that because I keep messing with this, trying to make it YouTube-y.
YouTube-y.
Ooh.